Jay's Talk brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob and Josh with you. As always, you can send us those texts. As Ben said, 590-590. Give us your name and your location. The Blue Jays get the job done. They win the rubber match this afternoon over the Tampa Bay Rays, taking 2 of 3 from the top team in the AL East. So for the time being, the Blue Jays holding serve when it comes to the wild card as they came into today tied with both the Red Sox and the Yankees, but the Blue Jays now half a game up on those teams for the top spot. Boston and Seattle currently tied at 3s right now as they are squaring off in Seattle. But the story once again in this one, we'll get into Bo Bichette, of course, who made some history today, Josh, but Robbie Ray, who dazzled once again, 13 strikeouts over 7 innings, giving up just 1 run to the Tampa Bay Rays. He has really given it to them this season. I mean, that's the best way to describe it. Mike Zunino's been sort of the boogeyman for Robbie Ray at times this year with some big homers off the Blue Jays lefty. But man, after that game against the Orioles, where there was obviously a lot of shenanigans going on there with Orioles manager Brandon Hyde, you predicted this last night. You said Robbie Ray was going to come out and shove. So you definitely are looking pretty good today.
Yeah. Well, should I like really take a victory lap that the prohibitive favorite, I think today seals the deal. Gerrit Cole labored in a big way last night. He was fortunate to get through relatively unscathed against the Orioles. Robbie Ray's winning the American League Cy Young. Barring something completely unforeseen, the Cy Young is Robbie Ray's to lose. So am I really going out on a limb saying that he was going to carve up a team that he's carved up pretty good a number of times this year? Maybe not, but this is exactly what an ace does. And you know, like the fact that we're still talking about Robbie Ray as the stopper, as the ace, still is a little bit crazy to me, considering you know what the expectations were coming into the season. But this was an ace start through and through. Rubber game of a big-time series. You know, you gave back a game in the standings to both Boston and New York last night. You did not want to lose the final two games of the series after winning in such emphatic fashion in the opener on Monday. And he just comes out and takes their soul, basically, from the hop. They had no hope in hell. Like Zunino hits that one majestic home run like he's been able to do really all season against left-handed pitching, and I think he's got 3 home runs in his career now against Robbie Ray. But that was it. He didn't budge at all, and the slider was great, and he had some 97s on his fastball. Just a virtuoso, and really, like, there's been a lot of signature moments from Robbie Ray. This is right there with that start, I think, against the White Sox when he struck out 14. And this might take the cake considering the magnitude of where the Blue Jays are right now in the standings as the signature moment of an absolutely incredible season for Robbie Ray.
Yeah, that game against Oakland, though, you know, a week and a bit ago was pretty big in that series sweep. So Robbie Ray just continues to do incredible things. And like I said, probably right now is the prohibitive favorite for the AL Cy Young Award. Saw this stat earlier as well that you sent off to me. But as far as left-handed pitchers go in Blue Jays history, 13-plus strikeout games. Robbie Ray today, Robbie Ray back on August 25th, Robbie Ray June 8th of this season, and Ted Lilly, who I not have expected, August 23rd, 2004. That's the list of left-handed pitchers that have struck out 13 or more batters in a single game. So Robbie Ray is rewriting the record books here as far as Blue Jays pitching goes in a single season. Obviously, a lot of talk about where this season ranks as far as Blue Jays history. Roger Clemens, I think, as you mentioned on Twitter, is the gold standard. The back-to-back Cy Young years, nobody's touching those. Like, those are just in their own tier when it comes to single seasons in Blue Jays history. But just looking at one metric, it was ERA plus, which you can find on Baseball Reference. Coming into today, the number obviously has gone up after today's start, but coming into today, Robbie Ray had an ERA plus of 163, which was good for 7th all-time for the Blue Jays. Clemens won with 222, was the ERA plus in 1997, followed it with 174 in the next season. Juan Guzman, who had an incredible 1996 season with an ERA plus of 171. Of course, league average is 100 in case you're looking for the baseline there. Dave Steeb in 1985 also did 171. Jimmy Key in 87 with 164. Sneaky underrated, even though we all watched it a season ago. Hyunjin Ryu tied for 5th with 164. Granted, it was a shortened season, but still, the eye test matched the numbers last year for Ryu. And then here's Robbie Ray with 163 coming into today. Obviously, it's gone up, so he will move ahead of Key and Hyunjin Ryu from last year. But that just sort of puts in perspective where this season from Robbie Ray ranks all time when it comes to the Blue Jays.
Yeah, well, I would say outside of those two Clemens seasons, which are honestly still kind of a blur because he was just like here, dominated, and then was gone and forced his way out of town and is a pariah for a number of reasons. But Robbie Ray's probably having the most dominant season by a pitcher in Blue Jays history since those, and really just in general, with those Clemens seasons. Like the number of strikeouts that he has now on the season are staggering, just absolutely staggering. He's got 233 strikeouts in 177 and a third innings. His strikeout per nine is approaching 12, which is far and away the best strikeout per nine in single season Blue Jays franchise history. Like Clemens is second best now at 10.5 or so strikeouts per nine. I know it's a different game than it was 20, 25 years ago when Clemens was dominating here, but you want to talk last year about Ryu and the eye test matching the numbers. The eye test blows you away here with Robbie Ray. Like you watch one inning of Robbie Ray pitching this year and it's just like, oh yeah, this guy's in the Cy Young conversation. It's abundantly clear with the way that he's able to work. No walks, right? Again, just not really buckling at all, not working a lot of deep counts, very few three ball counts, which was really his MO for basically his entire career up until this season. And now you're surprised if he walks one, let alone two batters in an outing, which is just, again, a testament to the work that has been done with him and Pete Walker and getting that delivery and those mechanics more repeatable, more in the zone. And again, to do it with two pitches too, to be the Cy Young front runner in the American League as a left-hander with two pitches, I know Kevin Barker has banged the drum for this. It's really almost unprecedented.
Yeah, it really is. Before we continue with the Robbie Ray discussion, I can already hear it. And I was hearing it when you were talking about your thoughts on Robbie Ray's year, people banging the table and yelling at the radio or yelling at their phone, listening to us saying, what about Roy Halladay, who's in the Hall of Fame? And what about Pat Henkin, who won a Cy Young Award? As far as ERA plus, Halladay was 8th and 9th on that list. And if you want to look at WAR for a single season, Pat Henkin's number 2 on the list for a single year. Back in 96, he had 8.6. WAR according to Baseball Reference. So, you know, it's difficult, right? You can pick a Roy Halladay season, you can pick a Pat Henkin season, you can pick a Robbie Ray 2021 campaign. Like, I don't think there's any wrong way to go about it. I think just in totality, what we're saying is we're witnessing one of the best single seasons by a Blue Jays pitcher. I don't think, you know, that's really saying anything crazy from especially what we saw today with the 13 strikeouts, but still got what, 5 more starts to make. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where those numbers eventually land at the end of the season. But as you said, just based off of sort of the dominance that we've seen with the strikeout stuff. I mean, you know, Pat Henkin pitched in a different era. Even Roy Halladay pitched in a different era. And even when he was at his peak as a member of the Toronto Blue Jays, yeah, there were some seasons where he, you know, struck out more batters. And I know strikeouts have gone way up over the last, you know, 15 years, as we've seen. But, you know, Roy Halladay, there was a time in his career where it was, I'm basically just going to break your bat every time and try to induce weak contact. And that's why he threw so many complete games. Robbie Ray is legitimately out here trying to strike out every single batter he faces, I think. Like, Robbie Ray's not looking for weak pop-ups. I'm sure he would love to get one-pitch pop-ups or one-pitch groundouts and get out of it. But he's basically looking to shove it down your throat every single time and make you look goofy.
And strikeouts, you know, in a free agent walk year, strikeouts, like the cash register sound effect should be, you know, every time Robbie Ray pitches. Like, you see, obviously the numbers speak for themselves, but like you see the ability to miss bats from the left side as a starting pitcher in your rotation. There is so much value in that type of pitcher, and the fact that he's put it all together and he's not just a strikeout artist who also gives up too many home runs and too much hard contact, because that's really what he's been on and off for most of his career. He's earning himself, we know this, a ton of cake. Like, it's going to be, I think, in the end, probably a pretty staggering amount of money. But, like, I'm most impressed that it seems like he's just putting every ounce of energy and everything he has into every pitch. And he never seems like he's overthrowing, right? It always just seems like it comes out so free and easy. And I, again, harken back to the work that him and Pete Walker have done in terms of just getting him more consistent and repeatable with a sustainable, effective motion to the home plate and mechanics. And instead of just like your arm flying all over the place and you're missing, you know, a glove side and you're missing inside, you're missing all over the place, he's not missing anymore. You look at a lot of the at-bats, and he's hitting the spot pretty consistently. So he's just become really a consistent pitcher in every way you want to be consistent. It's not just the results. It's the process. It's the work ethic. It's everything. And that's what you need to have a Cy Young caliber season.
Yeah, it's just been an absolute joy to watch Robbie Ray work every fifth day. And today in a big game where the Blue Jays needed it, like you said, trying to keep pace with the Red Sox and the Yankees, they take down the Rays in this one to keep hold serve, if you will, in the wild card standings. As always, you can reach us on the text line 59590. Give us your name and your location. We will get to those coming up in just a moment. But let's talk more about today's ball game. And Bo Bichette, with a big bounce back day after some tough ABs yesterday, takes Michael Wacha deep in the first inning to get the Blue Jays on the board. He is now the only other Jays shortstop in team history with 25-plus homers in a season. The other one, Tony Bautista, back in 1999. We all remember the batting stance. We all emulated it as kids growing up watching the Blue Jays in the 90s, of course. Bautista, one of the more entertaining hitters, I would say, in Jays history with that batting stance. And for a couple of years there, hit a lot of bombs. But just goes to show you where Bo Bichette, at the age of 23, is ranking among the shortstops in team history. There's been some pretty good ones. Of course, you know, Tony Fernandez, even guys like Alex Gonzalez for a time. Like, there's been some pretty solid shortstops on this team. But Bo Bichette already into the record books, Josh, here with 25 homers. You know, we heard last night on the text line people complaining about the ABs. And you and I both said it, that there are times where he's going to look bad. And then there's times where he takes a two-strike changeup on the inside part of the plate down low and hooks it over the wall in left field. And you're like, not too many people can do that type of stuff.
Yeah, live with the results. He is who he is, a wild horse. You mentioned that last night. Reckless abandon, I would say, is an effective way of describing the way that Bo Bichette plays. And the home run in the first inning was on a two-strike count, and he did a really good job. He was all over the changeup, figured that Wacha was going to try and get him on a changeup. And the approach was perfect, and he golfed it out of there. And that's what he's capable of doing. His bat-to-ball skills are good. When he makes contact, you like what the results are going to be. And it's just, you know, finding a way to make more contact and try and limit some of those flailing type of at-bats and inconsistent approaches. But I think like I said last night, that just is what it is. And if the end result is 25 to 30 homers, and depending where he bats in the lineup, 90 to 100 RBIs and 100 runs scored and flirting with a 300 average and stealing 25 bases, that's pretty freaking good. If that is still the player you get with, and he's going to leave you sometimes wanting more and hoping for more consistency and less swing and miss and less, you know, just kind of all over the place when it comes to the approach. We said this last night. I continue to believe it. The good so far outweighs any bad with Bo Bichette that you got to be really excited to live with what he gives you.
Well, if this is it, right? If this is as good as he ever gets, that's pretty amazing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to have a guy who's right now in top 30 as far as Fangraphs WAR goes at the age of, you know, 23. If Bo Bichette is this and a perennial all-star, you're going to take it 100 times out of 100. So, like, I think, you know, him and Vladdy being linked together and watching Vladdy take this next step, and, you know, all the, you know, struggles at times we've seen from Bo, whether it's the routine play at short or, you know, some of the bad ABs that he has, it definitely makes you want more and think, you know, if this guy could just rein it in a little bit, he could get to an even higher level. But if it's this for the next 10 years in a Blue Jays uniform, but when it's all said and done, he's going to be up on that level of excellence. Mm-hmm. I feel pretty confident saying that. So Bo Bichette having a phenomenal first full season as a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. We saw Joaquin Soria get into the game today. I know a lot of people talking about it, a lot of discourse on social media, seeing it as well on the text line. People chiming in, wondering about the decision to go to Joaquin Soria here. Hadn't pitched since Saturday. Neither had Nate Pearson. Julian Merriweather hadn't worked since Sunday. I guess those guys could have been the options. Now, for context, the situation that the Blue Jays found themselves in, top of the eighth, you've got a 6-1 lead. It's 8-9-1 due up. You've got guys like Taylor Walls and Brett Phillips coming up, and then Randy Arozarena at the top of the lineup. I know everybody keeps thinking about that awful game that he had against the Oakland Athletics, and you do have some pitchers that obviously higher up on the depth chart, you would think, and Julian Merriweather and Nate Pearson. But, you know, I fought with it for a good, you know, 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes, trying to figure out if I liked the move or I didn't like the move. I think I just came to the realization that, you know, it's 6-1, it's 8-9-1 in the lineup. Soria hasn't worked. You're expecting him to be able to deal with two guys who are batting right around the Mendoza line.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they obviously feel he's someone that has been around for a long time, has been a closer, been an all-star caliber player. Yeah, he's 37 years old and he's up there. But I think in totality, I didn't hate the move. I guess, you know, you could have made a case for any of those guys because they all hadn't worked in, you know, 4 days or so. But, you know, if Joaquin Soria gets out of that inning unscathed, I mean, I don't think anybody's really complaining. It's only because he gave up a 2-run homer to Brett Phillips where people are like, oh, what's going on here?
Well, and it's honestly like a bizarro world outing where 8-9 scorch him, two hard hit balls and a 2-run homer. And then obviously without the 3-batter minimum, he's getting hooked and, you know, the pitchforks are out even more so. But because you have to leave him in for another batter, you know, he comes back and gets 1-2-3, and I thought figured it out, you know, pretty well against three pretty quality hitters in Arozarena, Lau, I believe it was, and
Cruz.
Yeah. And he did the job there. But, like, I understand that people will say, you know, like, lower leverage, why not go to Pearson? Why not go to Merriweather? Like, he still needed some work as well, and he is coming off three straight clean outings. And I've been saying this, like, I think Joaquin Soria coming into today was ahead of both Nate Pearson and Julian Merriweather on the pecking order. He pitched in higher leverage spots. He pitched in a relatively high leverage spot in the Bronx and did the job. And he pitched a clean inning in the blowout game on Saturday night in the nightcap against Baltimore. I understand it always looks worse. Hindsight is always 20/20 in that situation. But the game's not necessarily over even against the Rays, and it's more important that you get the win any way that you can. And Joaquin Soria has been a more trusted reliever outside of that one blow up against Oakland than either of Nate Pearson or Julian Merriweather since they came back off the IL. So honestly, maybe I'm in the vast minority on this. I didn't mind that decision. I didn't hate it. And like maybe now he's a little bit further down after giving up a home run to the 9-hitter, but maybe he bought himself a little equity by getting 1-2-3 when it was all of a sudden a save situation or a 3-run game.
So I will say I was surprised that he stayed in after the AB to Randy Arozarena, but I figured at that point it was, okay, he's got one out. He gave up the 2-run homer to Brett Phillips. He's got one out. And I imagine, you know, Charlie Montoyo was thinking, well, I've got Richards and Mesa warming up in case I need him. Let's see what happens here with Manuel Margot. Then he gets Manuel Margot. And at that point, you already got two outs in the inning. Why would you bring in Trevor Richards or Tim Mesa to get one out? You're just going to give him the final out. And that's why he stayed in the ball game and was able to get himself out of the jam. So I know people have their bugaboos about Joaquin Soria based off of that game against Oakland, of course, and today is definitely not going to help the case. But, you know, he is someone that the Blue Jays are trusting in. It's sort of similar to Brad Hand a little bit, where Brad Hand, they felt maybe he could pitch high leverage innings because he's done it in the past. And same with a guy like Joaquin Soria, who, you know, wasn't a high leverage situation today, pitched himself into one. But they, you know, got him for a reason, and they think he can get the job done. It was curious, though, hearing Ben Wagner say on the broadcast that, you know, he was talking to the coaching staff. I think it was Pete Walker that said Soria is still kind of dealing with that finger issue that he went on the IL with. So, you know, that was kind of curious that, you know, they're bringing in a guy that maybe isn't 100%, but he needs the work. And so do Nate Pearson and Julian Merriweather, who I imagine we will see at some point over the weekend with the Minnesota Twins coming to town. We'll get to your text in a moment. 590-590 is where you can reach us. Give us your name and your location. Blue Jays win it. Take 2 of 3 from the Rays. They double up Tampa 6-3 this afternoon. It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Forget five tools. With that superstar head of hair, Bo has six tools. Bo Bichette and the Toronto Blue Jays play here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers, Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg. Blue Jays win it 6-3 over the Tampa Bay Rays this afternoon at Rogers Center as they win the rubber match, take 2 of 3, and move a half game up on both the Yankees and the Red Sox for that wild card spot, the top wild card spot. Robbie Ray dealing again this afternoon, 13 strikeouts, no walks, just one earned run over his 7 innings. He improves to 12-5. Bo Bichette with a big day as well, 2 for 3. 5 runs driven in, hit a 3-run homer, his 25th of the season. Right now, though, want to get to the text line. 590-590 is where you can always reach us. Give us your name and your location. Josh, what are you seeing on the text line?
Okay, so I'm from Jay in Ottawa. More on this Soria, usage. And he says, Pierce and Merriweather have higher ceilings than Soria, who's a known, and then in brackets, mediocre commodity. I would disagree with that. He's a known, consistent commodity. He's not what he used to be, but we don't know if we can trust them, though. Why aren't we using them in these situations to see what we have? What do you think about that?
Like I said, I understand where the Blue Jays are coming from. I know you said that you would have him higher on the rankings as far as the confidence rankings in the bullpen than Julian Merriweather and Nate Pearson at this point. Like, you could, you know, make a fair case with that. Merriweather hasn't looked particularly great since coming back. Nate Pearson's been a little bit homer prone since he's returned. But you know, those two guys, I think, have, you know, undeniably better stuff than Joaquin Soria at this point. So it is sort of the whole veteran experience over pure stuff standpoint. Which way do you want to lean? And right now it does seem like the Blue Jays feel that because he's a guy that's been there and done it, you know, Joaquin Soria can get into a spot. I just think today was kind of a circumstance where none of those guys had any work. And we know coming into a ball game, the Blue Jays generally tend to map out how they're going to use their relievers. If we get into this situation, we're going to go to A. If we go to this situation, we're going to go to B. And in that spot, they just felt it's the bottom of the lineup. We got Joaquin Soria, needs some work. 8-9-1, you know, how bad could it possibly go? We're going to need him down the stretch anyway, so you might as well use him. I just feel like this situation specifically was kind of its own circumstance, and I don't know if we necessarily can, you know, read too much into it, into, you know, where it all kind of works out as far as, you know, how they feel about Julian Merriweather and Nate Pearson along with Joaquin Soria. Those guys all kind of feel along the same wavelength for me. So I don't know if that's me sitting on the fence necessarily, but like I said, I can just understand why the Blue Jays decided to make that move today.
So it's a tough spot to be in because, like, in principle, I agree with the idea that you got to see what you can get from Pearson and Merriweather. But, like, you don't have the luxury, I guess, like, 5-run lead. If they give up a couple of home runs, like Soria gave up a couple of runs, you still have a bulge to work with and you can be good to go. But you just got to put your best foot forward to winning ball games right now. And I would think that Joaquin Soria is slightly above those guys because, you know, like, they haven't really pitched in leverage. Like, Merriweather hasn't pitched in leverage outside of when he gave up the home run to Santander against the Orioles since April. And Nate Pearson really doesn't have any big league experience as a relief pitcher in general, but particularly in leverage, whereas Soria kind of does. And they probably felt like, at least for today, Soria gave them a better chance to get through that in as close to unscathed shape as possible to the ninth inning. Yeah, it didn't really work out, but I got to tip my cap that he was able to bounce back and get the 1-2-3 hitters in a Rosarena, Margot, and Cruz. But I don't know how much runway do you give Pearson and Merriweather? You're kind of running short here. What is there, 16 games left in the season? Are they going to be able to do enough to work themselves into the conversation? Because I think, like, at best, you're talking about 5 and 6 behind your core four of Romano, Meza, Simber, and Richards.
Yeah, and you know, the Blue Jays did have Meza and Richards warming up, you know, after he gave up the 2-run homer to Brett Phillips. So they obviously were thinking, okay, if he gets in any sort of trouble here, then we're going to go straight to our best guys, our most reliable guys coming out of the pen. Like I said before, a little surprised that he was still in there after the Randy Arozarena AB, but, you know, he gets Manuel Margot, and then at that point, it's already 2 outs in the inning. So, you know, if Nelson Cruz hits a homer, gets on base, that's probably the hook for Joaquin Soria at this point. But You know, we've been doing a lot of nitpicking the last couple of days. It feels like today is another one of those spots with, you know, Joaquim Soria coming into the game. But I can understand why people had an issue with it and would have seen, you know, rather have seen someone else in that spot. Still, they're going to need Joaquim Soria in some innings here. Maybe not high leverage innings, but they're going to need him down the stretch, especially on days where Meza, Richards, Simber, and Romano pitch. They might need him the next day.
So Sean from Owen Sound says, we peaked and couldn't wait any longer, but didn't we peak too soon? Can we maintain this pace and or hope that the Red Sox or Yankees continue to struggle? And like, I don't know if they've peaked. It's hard to dispute that going on an insane run like this. Like, are you really going to be able to maintain that over another 16 games? Probably not, but you can't rule anything out with the way that this club is playing right now. But I think it just sort of illustrated how tall the task was going to be to make up a 6.5 game deficit and 9.5 on the Yankees with four teams to leapfrog in the standings, and not just taking care of your own business, but also needing help. And now you're back in a position where if you reasonably take care of your business, you're going to require one of Boston or New York most likely to really go on a pretty solid run here over the last 15-17 games to overtake you. So you've just put yourself back sort of in the driver's seat, which is really all you could hope for considering the state of affairs, you know, in late August.
Yeah, this is the spot you want to put yourself in where you control the destiny. And, you know, of course, you're still watching the out-of-town scoreboard. I can guarantee you right now in the Blue Jays clubhouse, this Red Sox-Mariners game is on the TV, yeah. And there's guys sitting there watching as they, you know, get dressed and obviously get ready to head home for the night. But they're tuning in and watching what's going to happen here. I imagine some guys are going to be watching tonight when the Yankees take on the Orioles. But, you know, you're in a much better spot than you would have been, you know, let's say if the Blue Jays didn't go on this crazy start to September and they're a game or two back right now of the wild card spot. And they really need some help. They need the Mariners to win these games. They need the Orioles to win these games in order to, you know, claw back in it. But right now, you know, today, they just had to hold serve, right? You're obviously, it's a tall task to, you know, try to keep winning ball games. But you're in a spot now where if you win, you know, you're definitely doing yourself a lot of favors. You don't need the out-of-town scoreboard as much, whereas if you were chasing, then you would need it in a bigger spot.
Yeah, I think that, like, this stuff about peaking too soon, you needed to peak when you peaked. Like, maybe this isn't their peak, but you needed to have this kind of insane run to put yourself in an advantageous position. And now they've done that. And like, I've tweeted, I think it was right before the Oakland series, after they took 2 out of 3 against the O's, that they were going to, like, maybe need 21 wins over the final 30 games to get to 91, which I thought, and I think a lot of people looked at 91, maybe 92, as the number that would be enough to get you into the postseason. And they've already got 12 of those wins. And to get to 91 over the final 16 games, you're talking about 9-7 with 10 of those 16, I guess, left against Minnesota and Baltimore. So you got to like the position you find yourselves in with 16 games to go.
Definitely. What else you seen on the text line?
All right. So we got one from Ruben in Alberta. Bo Bichette will be the all-time best shortstop in Jays history by a mile. That's my prediction anyways. And offensively, production-wise, probably and maybe even definitely, but like, you got to win, and Tony Fernandez's ability to be on winning teams, the glove, might give him the nod. But if you win even one World Series in this city and put up the numbers, then I'll agree with that wholeheartedly. But it's coming down to wins.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Fernandez is second on the team all time in wins above replacement, so that's a high bar to reach. Does he have the potential to do it? Of course. Does he have the longevity in his favor? Of course. And he's gotten off to such a sensational start to his career. But, you know, like we talked about before, if he is doing this, if this is the ceiling for Bo Bichette and he does not improve, then, yeah, he is on his way to being the best shortstop in team history, you know, winning championships and winning playoff series. That will obviously add to the lore as well. But he's just gotten off to such an incredible start and given himself such a strong beginning to his career that could be on the table for sure. Let's go back to the text line.
So we've got one from Darren in St. Catharines. Why isn't Breivik Valera playing more often? Much better hitter at third base position. And I think he's referring to Jake Lamb. And like I the Breivik Valera story has been nice. He's certainly overperformed, I think, especially at the dish with what he's been able to do. He had a three-hit game the other night, and he's had a lot of good at-bats and a lot of big spots and has helped spark some rallies over the last 6 weeks or so. But like against right-handed pitching, I'm okay to give Jake Lamb at-bats. We've talked about this. It wasn't a great day for Jake Lamb today, but he had some good moments over the weekend, hit his first home run with Toronto in Baltimore, has more pop, has more offensive upside than Breivik Valera. So if the matchups and the platoon split favors Lamb against right-handed pitching, then play Lamb, because I think there's more juice in that bat on the whole than there is in Breivik Valera's.
Yeah, he's got a career OPS of 802 against right-handed pitching coming into today's ball game. Hit a ball hard the opposite way. It was caught, but still struck one well. It's just funny to look at this Blue Jays lineup right now and looking around the field and, you know, how a few weeks ago you were just really concerned about what was going on at third base. Kevin Smith was striking out seemingly half the time. Breivik Valera had really cooled off after his, you know, hot start for the Blue Jays. But now, since adding Jake Lamb, who's had some pretty big ABs, you know, in that Baltimore series specifically, Breivik Valera has had some big hits over the last week and a bit now. The catching position is obviously shored up with Danny Jansen coming back and doing what he's doing and Alejandro Kirk being on a hot streak here. Like, third base is really only the one position right now where you're still kind of like, eh, it's not great. But that just goes to show you how strong this Blue Jays lineup and how deep it is right now that, you know, your really only bugaboo is, you know, Jake Lamb and Breivik Valera. That's your choice seemingly every day. Which one of these guys is going to play? Because everybody else, you know, is kind of locked in. I know Reese McGuire got in the game last night and don't need to revisit that. But yeah, third base, you know, it's not a position that you feel super strong about, but you're not in a spot where you're like, oh, Breivik Valera or oh, Jake Lamb. Like, this is the bottom of the lineup, the nine hitter really that you're looking at.
Yeah, it's not costing you ball games by any measure. And defensively, it's been fine. You know, Jake Lamb doesn't have as much range as he did early in his career with Arizona, but he hasn't necessarily hurt you there. And Valera has been pretty good for the most part defensively at third base. And it's a testament to the depth and talent of the rest of the lineup that a premium, usually premium position like third base, where you want a heavy bat from that position, and the Blue Jays pretty much have the opposite of that between, you know, even Santiago Espinal when he was swinging it well, not a tremendous amount to thump, but it still hasn't mattered because your outfield obviously hits for a ton of power, your first baseman does, your shortstop does, your second baseman has almost 40 home runs, your catchers have been chipping in offensively, so it kind of masks what a lot of teams I think would probably struggle with if they had a bit of a black hole offensively at third base. But the Blue Jays haven't really batted an eye with that, and I don't think that they're going to. I think this is, for the most part, maybe Espinal gets back, but I think you're going to be seeing a bunch of Valera and Jake Lamb the rest of the way, at least until if the Blue Jays are able to get into the playoffs.
All right, let's grab a couple more texts if we can.
So just like a lot of love, obviously, for Robbie Ray, deserves Cy Young, Faisal in Toronto. Gem of a game from Robbie. Give that man the Cy Young. Good day from the top of the order. Overall, solid bounce back to take the series. Like, I haven't been wanting to do contract talk in the throes of this intense pennant chase, but like, the more I think about this, you know, Patrick Corbin's deal a couple years ago with the Nationals is starting to seem like it might be a comp for Robbie Ray. I thought it was going to be Zach Wheeler's 5 years, 118, but maybe it's going to go to a sixth year on Robbie Ray and about $140 million. And honestly, like, can you really deny it? I don't think you can.
It's so funny because, you know, as you're talking about the contract stuff, I was thinking back to when we were having these discussions in May, and to get to this point now where, you know, you're talking about contracts in the 6 years, $140 million range. I think initially when we were talking about, hey, what would you give Robbie Ray as far as an extension or as a free agent? I think you and I kind of threw around like 3 years, like $45 million or something. And we're like, how much more could he possibly get? And now we're adding on $100 million essentially from, you know, May to this point. And it just goes to show you how impressive he has been. 6-140 is terrifying. I mean, Patrick Corbin, you know, different pitcher, but we've seen how sideways that has gone for the Washington Nationals. But you know, as tough as hard of a pill as it would be to swallow, looking at something like that and thinking about the downside, you're kind of in a spot where I think you just need to do it. Because, you know, we've talked a lot before about the other free agents in this crop that are set to, you know, head to free agency this offseason. How many of those, you know, old-time guys, and, you know, use air quotes old-time, but like Justin Verlander, Kershaw, Scherzer, Greinke, like, are any of those guys coming here? Probably not. I mean, Robbie Ray is in that tier now based off of this season. And how many more guys are going to be able to find that are, you know, better than him? And yeah. He obviously has all the familiarity, yada, yada, yada. You know, I think you kind of just got to get it done. And it's going to be tough to look at, and it may hurt you in 3 or 4 or 5 years. But if you win a World Series title, who gives a crap? Banners, flags fly forever. I think you just got to get it done.
Yeah, I would just say when it comes to free agents in general, but especially free agent pitching, there's a huge amount of risk that you're taking on, even with a pitcher that you feel safe with. And like, better the devil you know as opposed to the devil you don't know. And I don't know that that's necessarily the best phrase in this situation, because Robbie Ray's been very much an angel this year, but you never know what's going to happen with pitchers. And at least you have a familiarity, a baseline with Robbie Ray. There's a comfort zone, and you know what makes him tick. You know his strengths and his weaknesses. Whereas you can do all the recon in the world on another top-tier free agent pitcher, but once it push comes to shove, you get into the lab, the season starts, and it just maybe isn't the fit that you thought it was going to be. I'd rather stick with Robbie Ray. Obviously, the performance dictates it, but you know what you're getting with Robbie Ray, and there's something to be said for that when there's so much risk with these types of deals.
Yeah, all I'll say is I might have to take some vacation if Robbie Ray doesn't re-sign with the Blue Jays, and I might have to take some time off from doing radio shows. I don't want to be a part of that and see what happens with all the fans in Toronto and around this country. Blue Jays win it 6-3 over the Tampa Bay Rays. When we continue on Jays Talk, we'll wrap it up, get you set for the weekend series against the Twins. It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers, Rob and Josh on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Essentials for a game. Bat, ball, glove, radio. This is Toronto Blue Jays Baseball on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg with you here for about another minute or so. Blue Jays victorious today, winning 6-3 over the Tampa Bay Rays as they move a half game up on the Red Sox and Yankees for that top wild card spot. Boston, Seattle tied at threes right now as they're in the top of the seventh inning at T-Mobile Park in Seattle. Yankees and Orioles coming up in about 35 minutes time from Camden Yards in Baltimore. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, powered by Jack Lynx and Hunger Down to the Minors and Feed Your Wild Side. A well-deserved off day for the Blue Jays tomorrow before they host the Minnesota Twins. Josh Donaldson and company coming to Toronto for the first of three on Friday night. Hyunjin Ryu gets the start against righty Michael Pineda. It's a 7:07 Eastern first pitch right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. For Ben Wagner, Tom Young, Josh Santos, and Josh Goldberg, I'm Rob Wong. Thanks for tuning in. It's been Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.